Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Husky by Boo podcast. This is Ariel. This podcast is going to be different. We'll start right off the gate. I have a guest. Weird, right? my guest is Robert Frost. He co-wrote, he wrote the Spirit of Vengeance comic, which I worked on a couple of years back. I did two issues on that, and he is currently rewriting the story and making it new. He also has a bunch of projects lined up, as you're going to be listening to. He is a cool dude. He's a great guy. He has his mind busy on a lot of stuff, and he has opinions about a lot of different things. He's currently running this project called Planet 817 Comics, where I have a lot of independent stuff, but working with some established characters and in the independent scene, like with Power Rangers, Batman, Spirit of Vengeance, the one that I worked on. So this is going to be a little conversation that you hear here with Robert. I hope you guys enjoy it. Hope you guys like it. And it's something different, you know. I was complaining that, oh, I need a wingman. Well, I got one today. So without further ado, here's Rob. And we start right out of the gate. So enjoy. The audio is picking up.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah. And it's picking you up and it's picking me up. So I guess we are good.
Groovy.
Just keep recording and then I'll just cut off the fat from here and there. I don't do much editing. I do it like... I always say that if you're going to emulate some people in terms of how to do certain things, just follow the best. And right now, Joe Rogan is the best. And yeah, his shit is barely edited.
Yeah, mostly because Joe is extremely high as balls.
Yeah. I mean, I love watching him. Man. I love watching him because he's the most real guy I've seen in media in a long, long time. He keeps it real no matter whose size he is. I mean, you would say that he's kind of liberal, but he's kind of right-wing as well because the fucker loves guns like crazy.
Well, signing up for a $300 million Spotify deal, it doesn't necessarily hurt either.
Yeah, I mean, and he doesn't give a fuck. That's another thing. That is something that has been missing in America for like eons. People that actually start not giving a fuck. And that's kind of the reason I understand why people vote for Trump, because he's another guy that shows kind of an attitude of, I don't give a shit. And that is something that's missing now, because right now, a bunch of fucking snowflakes, the world has become just bitching about every fucking little detail. And it amazed me that a couple of days ago, Bill Maher, of all fucking people, Bill Maher called the left on it. And he's like, stop fucking bitching about every goddamn fucking thing. That's the reason why people are voting for Trump.
I don't generally try to get my hat into politics, mostly because it's just not worth my time.
Yeah, me neither.
Capacity. There's a quote from John Stewart: "We have 37 different kinds of Coke and only two political parties in this country. There's a problem somewhere."
Yes, that's the big problem. I mean, at least here in DR, I give them props for that, because there's like 17 parties.
Oh, you've got 17 different parties?
Yes.
I don't know your country's political situation.
Yes, so there's like 17, but in the actuality, there's like two big ones. But then the rest of them are like, you know, and then in the election, they just all, you know, it's okay, who has more money? The guy just raises his hand. I do. Okay, we'll go with you.
That's exactly what a lot of people miss the point. And not to get too political, because I'm, especially with breaking into industry stuff, as well as, you know, I don't like to try to throw my hat into things that are too political to...
Me neither.
Separate myself from, like, opportunities and stuff. Not to say that I won't say something, but it's just, you get to a point where you're just sitting here like, where is all of your energy being spent? Is it spent on Facebook all day searching for things on either side to get upset about? Or are you actually going to put forth effort into something as opposed to complaining about it all the time?
Yeah, like, I mean, when you look at everybody and you start complaining about, oh, this guy said this, well, this guy said that. And then you say, okay, but are you fucking living your life?
That's why That's one thing. One thing I did want to get into, and it's something especially since you and I are both in comics, is I am sick to fucking death, and I don't care what future company may or may not see this. I am never going to put anything political unless it's inherently necessary in any script or format, because that is the huge thing that is so absolutely annoying. Marvel's doing it. DC's doing it.
Oh, shit.
The only thing that I've seen are third party. Third party seems to be the future. There was somebody I was talking to about this, except for on the CW. If you watch anything on the CW.
Oh, my God.
One of my favorite shows that I've been watching, even though it's kind of gone downhill, I've watched Supernatural since it came out in 2005. I was in fifth grade, and that's when Smallville was still on. And that was my one of the few things I had Superman related, because comic book movies back then were just – it was kind of hit or miss if you were going to get anything good. But Supernatural is ending after 15 years, and I had a thought with a friend of mine. I was like, oh, my God. The CW is fucked. Like, they are fucked after this. They've had Arrow that ended. Supernatural has led the network for God knows how many years after Smallville was their last cash cow. Arrow already ended. Batwoman is an absolute disaster. Oh, Legends of Tomorrow is doing, I think, one more season. They have The Flash, which it's The Flash.
It's like, I mean, it's hit or, it was hit or miss at first, and now it's like, it's there.
It's just like, I'm not looking forward to this Superman and Lois show that they're producing. It's like, really? Like, we haven't had a Superman show since Smallville, but you're choosing this universe. I don't have any problems with, I think his name's Tyler Hoechlin.
Yeah.
I don't have any problems necessarily with him, but just the pacing of what they did with him in Supergirl was just kind of off, kind of what they did with Batman in the Batwoman show, I only watched two episodes, and I'm like, I'm out, can't do it. The second that they placed emphasis on something inherently so political that it didn't need to be, like, I understand Kate Kane, Batwoman from the comics. I've never read a single Kate Kane story. The only thing that I've seen was one of the animated movies that they had where Kate Kane showed up, because I don't read anything current comic related, because there's just too fucking much at this point, because you miss one thing and you're behind like a 97 issues. But going back to it, they completely just, I don't know if it's like the CW mandate that it's either got to be rights or investors or somebody, some producer behind the scenes has absolutely no fucking clue what to do with Superman or Batman. Because when they brought on Kate Kane Batwoman, it was just, oh, Bruce is missing. He's just pieced the fuck out by, and she's got access to everything, and she's better than Bruce. And it's like, all right, I can see the girl power message you're kind of going for, but it's just extremely forced. And if your character's only personality trait is lesbian, then that's just pandering to a small demographic and throwing ideas onto a wall and hoping what sticks. I mean, yeah, you want to have a positive role model for the LGBT community. That's cool. That's great. I support that. But when that's her entire character, I mean, come on. That's a corporate decision to make a corporate show without any kind of life to it. That's why the shows like The Boys on Amazon don't give a fuck about any of that. They address everything and make fun of everything. I haven't seen it, but Doom Patrol, from what I hear, is really good. And Umbrella Academy, shows like that, even it's not necessarily comic book related, but it's in that genre, Lock and Key. Just different independent things are popping up left and right. And I'm seeing a trend, and I remember having a conversation with you about this. Independent comics are more of the way of the future, with like Boom Studios, places like that. Because so many people, or Image, Dark Horse, people are getting sick and tired of the same status quo. How many more times can Batman die and come back to life? How many more times can we reset the timeline before people don't give a fuck anymore? These comics have gone on 80 plus years. 80 years, mind you. Granted, it would be asinine, completely asinine, for DC and Warner Brothers to just go up and be like, you know what, we're going to stop publishing our meal ticket. We're just, you know what, fuck it. We're just going to stop doing it. But in the same hand, you got to find something different with it. That's kind of, I think, a fresh take that I'm looking forward to as far as movie-wise is Matt Reeves' Batman, which it looks like they're doing something completely off the grain. If you do you know who Darren Aronofsky is?
Yes.
He, if you ever look into his version of Batman, it was essentially going to be the Joker, but like set in the 1970s, Bruce Wayne was going to be like this very dirt cloth style Batman. His Batmobile was a souped up Lincoln Continental with a bus engine. It was very Batman Year One, and the studio didn't want to push on it because it was, they said it was too extreme and too edgy. But things like that, that level of care, being able to go against the grain, is the main reason why so many people are sick and tired even of the Marvel Studios movies. Like, yeah, they're fine, but it's surface level fast food. I mean, it's, yeah, there's a giant fan base and some of them are made really well, but like a lot of the stories, it's just like, it's hit or miss. After Endgame, it's like, okay, what could you possibly do more?
Exactly.
I mean, after Endgame, I remember sitting in the theater with my sister, and her and I used to be like, we used to binge Marvel movies, and I got her into the MCU with that. And after sitting in Endgame, I was like, it was fine. Like, I wasn't blown away by it, but I see the slate for Marvel coming out with Phase 4, and it's like, who gives a shit about any of these titles?
Exactly.
Like, that's how they built themselves on lesser known characters. But I don't want to see a Shang-Chi movie. But like, I can't recall, like, Shang-Chi showed up in a couple of Iron Fist stories as far as I know when I was a kid in the 90s, but I don't give a shit about Shang-Chi. I mean, like, if that's the way they want to push it, that's fine. But same thing with the Black Widow movie. I don't care. Like, she's, spoiler alert, she already died in Endgame.
Yeah, so she's fucking dead.
it's pointless. It's like you're making a pointless movie. The same thing with the Eternals or anything else that's coming out. I'm vaguely excited for Moon Knight because I've been a Moon Knight fan forever behind the scenes. One of my favorite Moon Knight stories was Welcome to New Egypt. If anybody wants to read that, it's a psychological mindfuck of a story. Granted, you have to know some stuff about Moon Knight, but the fact that they're making a Moon Knight show kind of makes me excited but worried. It's like, you could fuck that up easily, but then again, who besides the five Moon Knight fans out there are really going to know if you fuck something up?
Exactly. That's the thing now, that Marvel, and by the way, Marvel already owns like 90% of all their characters. I think there's still some dispute with certain characters here and there, but
I think Daredevil and all the Defenders finally went back after the whole Netflix thing, which, oh God, that fucking makes me depressed, but sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that they own almost all their characters back, contrary to DC that had all their characters from the get-go and never did dick with them, except now. With the exception of that, Marvel owns all their characters now, and I understand they probably had a plan set up from the get-go. Kevin Feige likes to plan ahead, and for what we've seen, although some changes here and there due to circumstances and whatnot. But the thing is that having all these toys now in their chest, and they decide to play with the lesser known from Guardians of the Galaxy, which were already less known to the begin with, and playing with these characters. Look, I've been reading comics all my life. I've collected comics since I was a small child in the States, when I lived in the States. So I even have my rack of comics here that I own, some of them old as hell. And I don't recall none of these fucking characters.
I remember when I heard Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, exactly how the movie said, who? And I'm like, all right, that was pretty good. I actually dig what James Gunn did because it's so off the grain and studio formulaic. Like, one of the things that I saw was a complete missed opportunity. Granted, there's the corporate aspect. That's not going to change because that's how you get the investors, you get all the studios and blah-bitty-blah behind the scenes, is when the MCU was first coming out, Iron Man, big hit. I was like, cool, sold, love the direction. It reminds me of a live-action Marvel Ultimate Alliance game. Like, that game, I played the shit out of that game, and that's how I got introduced to a lot of the lesser-known Marvel characters through that. And I saw the MCU coming up, and after like Iron Man 2 came out, I was like, that was a little rough. And then I saw Thor and I'm like, okay, that was there. And then Captain America came out and then it turned into an episode of Power Rangers. And yeah. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I'm like, that beginning was like really good. I'm like, oh my God, I'm into this. Then he's Cap and there's lasers and shit in World War II. I'm like, whoa, hold on. Go back. Yeah, go back to the good
little
stuff.
They jumped the shark a little on that one.
They did. Have you ever seen, they had two direct-to-video animated features, Avengers, some Avengers title they had in the early 2000s. It was essentially the ultimate run of Avengers. Yeah, those two movies, I mean, nobody fucking talks about them, but they were perfect for the time because nobody knew who the fuck Iron Man was. Nobody knew who the fuck Captain America, they're like, oh, that dickhead who throws a frisbee, like, who gives a shit? Now it's like fucking you throw anything with Captain America's name on it, Captain America fucking toothpaste, $8 million revenue. You can do whatever you want. But there's just so much surface level like garbage. And that's why I started Planet mostly, was just trying to differentiate and make something completely new. That's why when I came to you, when we started Spirit, I was like, you know, we're going to do something kind of not edgy for the sake of edgy, but doing it just to say, you know what? We're tired of all this shit. We're going to go places that we can't go, and we're going to do whatever the fuck we want to do. And if you don't like it, get out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that is very missing right now. I mean, people talk shit about the 90s, comic books in the 90s. Like they
Rob Liefeld.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he gets the worst hate that I've ever seen an artist get. I mean, yeah, there's some shit that is merited, like that Captain America shit on the chest. That's a little merited. I can't defend the dude there. But it's not that it was total horseshit, you know. It's not that it was total shit that he was drawing. He did some cool drawings. And not just him. I mean, what I liked about the 90s is that it wasn't fucking traditional shit. It wasn't the same old goddamn bullshit that you see. Like, now everybody draws the same style, with certain exceptions here and there. But everybody draws the same shit. Everybody draws the same style. And you don't see that difference. But in the 90s, it's like, okay, this guy's clearly this guy's clearly that. And you can tell automatically who is who.
Exactly. That's one of the hard problems with trying to find an artist specifically. And I'm blessed with the people that I have working on Lost Ranger right now. My buddy Edgar, he's able to mimic the Boom Studios Power Ranger style, but yet make it his own. Some small behind the scenes things. People from Boom Studios have reached out to him and my team and said that they're extremely interested in where we're going and there might be opportunities because
awesome.
They think that it's inherently original, that we're doing something. We're doing something without studio approval, essentially. We're the weird kids in the background that decided, you know what, we're going to take the teacher's homework and we're going to do whatever the fuck we want with it. December 30th, we have release that I think we're going to make it. It's set in stone right now. I've set all my people on it. We're trying to work on it. But as you know, I have a propensity to not write very short scripts.
Yeah.
The first episode, when we first clocked it, was 117 pages.
Holy shit.
I
would imagine that the artist was like, okay, kill me now.
We have two colorists and one line and inker. Edgar's essentially pulling the train, but we're getting colors done as fast as we're getting inks done. And we have about 15 pages done so far, blocked out, but it's a serialized story. And we have the first bit of it. The plot of it is it's a grittier, not like gritty for the sake of gritty. Like, the best comparison I've made is what Christopher Nolan did for Batman, we're going to do for Power Rangers.
Okay.
What they did in the 2017 movie kind of sort of did. Essentially, we're telling a story that takes place in an alternate 2005 where it's not the cast from the show, but it's a universe that like is very different and adjacent, where this Mighty Morphin took place in 1985, playing on like Stranger Things and like that kind of environment. And our story is about this guy named Alexander who shows up, and it's revealed that there has been a seventh ranger this entire time. Like, in every major timeline, he's been there. The question is, who the fuck is this guy and why does nobody remember him? That's what the story is about. You get the first episode, without giving too much away, is fragmented through the seven different cast members who are all in their 30s now. It's kind of like Stephen King's It meets Pacific Rim. You get all of the characters that are it, that are adults and they've moved on and they don't have this life anymore. And suddenly there's this guy who comes straight out of nowhere and says, hey, you have to stop everything that you're doing with your job, your family, everything that you've built over the last 15 years to come back to a war that you got away from. And it's all of these different characters who are essentially all fucked up with like post-traumatic stress. And Jason, the Red Ranger, is essentially we kind of imply, because I went and looked into, I mean, there's certain things we can get away with, but like if the franchise heads at Hasbro, like, look at, you're doing something that they don't necessarily agree with, we don't want to get yanked, but it's implied that he's an alcoholic of sorts.
Okay.
I mean, you see different perspectives of their, in their reflections in different panels, you see their Ranger selves are talking to them. So they're clearly not all there, but thinking upon it, and Audie Shanker, do you remember the R-rated Power Rangers, a short that came out a couple years ago?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, Audie Shanker actually helped with the style of what I wanted to go, even though I've never met him or spoke with him. But he said, these kids would be fucked up. Like, they're essentially child soldiers. And I'm like, that's exactly what we need to go on.
A bunch of PTSD.
The interesting fact is, our story is inherently told through Alexander's perspective, who is this guy who is essentially Jason Bourne meets, like, he's the smartest man in the room, but he's the most mysterious. Like, you don't know anything about him. So we can kind of do whatever we want. And what's really interesting is two aspects of that. The live action potential, especially with Power Rangers Unworthy, if you know them, their independent show. They essentially make their own Power Ranger series in live action with a very short budget, and it's huge. They got like 1 million views per episode. They're shooting 4 and 5 right now. But with that universe they created, there's cross-promotional material, and I'm really cool with the people that are behind the scenes. And there might be, before COVID fucked everything up,
mm-hmm.
we set up a donation fund to get the suit made, because your boy is just jumping into a suit. So
okay.
I'm going to try to get that. We set up the fundraiser in March, like a week.
What color are you going to be?
And I was like, motherfuck. Cause I'm like, it's still a large amount of money, like 12, what is it, like $1,200 or so for helmet and the bodysuit itself. It's not cheap, but still it's fairly inexpensive for what we need. Set it up. A week later, COVID hits. I'm like, fuck. And all the lockdowns happened. I had locations set up with people that I know from the last time when I was set up with Batman that I've told you about. Those people had me with locations and stuff. We were like, oh, we can shoot something really small. We can help you with this. And now state of Illinois is still back under lockdown now, so we can't do any filming and everything's kind of fucked. But hopefully, fingers crossed, as you know, December 30th, I'm fucking holding on to the edge of my teeth, because Edgar, my main line artist and anchor, said he works best under stress, and I'm going to hold them to that.
Oh my God.
Because December 30th is crunch time. We have to also find a place, which I know you and I ran into that problem. Linktree through PDF.
Yeah.
A bunch of people are doing that. I'm like, that seems to be the best route. I looked at, what is it, Comic Vine and a bunch of other places. They wanted to charge out the ass, and I'm like, no. Comixology too. We submitted like 10 early pages because I had an email with somebody. It didn't go anywhere. It sounded like they kind of just or whatever. But going back to it, we're just focused on a lot of really independent shit, and something that you will really like is it's on the table, and there's some things that I can't talk about, but Spirit is getting 100% revival, and we're going balls to the wall, like Evil Dead levels of horror, and it's going to be we're Definitely going in a darker direction, but you also get co-creator credit, so...
I mean, shit was dark the two episodes we did. That was pretty fucking dark.
We're going to make that look like an episode of Rugrats. Oh, Lord. Like, I wrote episode one. Episode two is in draft stages, but with different scripts. This might give you anxiety, and I even said this to my team. I have 57 scripts in different various stages on my pile, ready to go at any disposal. Spirit is what I'm thinking of doing is I have a Spider-Man series that we were working on. It was supposed to be done by Halloween. We didn't even get started, but I mean, that was COVID. I had a guy drop out expected because he had to take care of shit. But anyway, we have a Spider-Man series that we're working on called Spider-Man Dark Mirror, where it's essentially Dante's Inferno with Spider-Man. And I think the best way to do it is to release that series, see the feedback, because JW's in that. He has a cameo through that as like a secondary character. And I think the best thing to do is to just do a spinoff of that and then just get his own series as opposed to just starting it off from scratch. But it's all dependent on COVID and everything else and behind the scenes, blah, 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 yeah. That makes me want to pull my fucking hair out. Because there are so many different – I'm not going to talk shit or burn bridges, but there are so many companies or people behind the scenes like, hey, we saw your art on blah, blah, blah. We really are interested in talking and doing something. And then they're just like, oh, well, without signing an NDA, hand over any script you got and we'll take a look and get back to you. It's like, motherfucker, I ain't giving you my script. Are you nuts?
That's a fuck you.
Yeah. Like, do you ever see that documentary, Batman and Bill, about how badly Bill Finger got fucked over?
I've been told. I mean, I already had, I have a book here that already talks about that I've had for years, about the 60 years of DC Comics. And yeah, they kind of gloss over it, and I was like, and that's when the first time I knew that Bill Finger got fucked.
That's why I am so protective of everything, and granted, it's extremely hard to do that, but like, if you get the right people to help you sign NDAs, which help you own your script outright, so if somebody takes it, you can go, gotcha, bitch. But yeah, Bill Finger, that documentary and the book by I know his first name's Mark. I can't remember his Nobleman, Mark Nobleman. Mm-hmm. That documentary was depressing. Long story short, Bill Finger died broke and alone in an unmarked fucking grave with absolutely nothing to his name. Yeah. Like that's bullshit. And the fact that Bob Kane he tried to, in his quotes, make amends, but it was already too late. Bill had already passed away. And it took all of those years up till Batman versus Superman for his fucking granddaughter to get him just even co-creator credit. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, fuck Bob Kane. Remove his goddamn name from it. Like, in my opinion, and this might be a controversial opinion, I think Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko did more for Spider-Man and the Marvel lineup than Stan Lee actually did. It's that kind of...
That's something that Alan Moore has said. That Stanley has fucked over a bunch of people, including Kirby and Ditko.
When Stan died, a bunch of, granted, these are unsubstantiated rumors that they're coming out there. People are talking about writing books about Stanley was like the Bob Kane of everything, and that Jack Kirby and everybody else that was behind the scenes came up with way more. And understandably, you got to have a figurehead for your franchise. But having the little guys fucked over like that, that just pisses me off. Yeah, like Bill essentially came up with everything.
Yes.
Bob Kane's original Batman, he looked like a fucking douchebag with a fucking blonde hair, domino mask, and like red tights. And then Bill Finger was like, here, hold my beer. And then came up with everything. And then Bob Kane's like, all right, thank you. But given the time, I think it was right after the Great Depression or during the Great Depression, there was no way to protect yourself. I mean, you were lucky enough to get a fucking paycheck back then. I mean, that whatever Bill contributed, the fact that DC Comics tried to hide it for over 70 years or so, that's extremely fucking sketchy. And even, side fact, did you know Bill Finger actually helped create Alan Scott, the Green Lantern?
I did not know that far. that.
Yeah, fact. I was like, wait, what? He came up with a lot more from DC Comics a lot of people
He's
want
basically
to...
Jack Kirby in DC.
Basically. The only thing that Bill before the lawsuit, or I think it was a court lawsuit that got his name on everything, was there was an episode of the Batman TV show. I think it was Egghead. Don't quote me on that. It was an episode, and Bill Finger wrote it. And one of the guys in the documentary, Mark Nobleman, had said that Bill wanted to watch it on a big screen, and Bill cried the second he saw his name written by Bill Finger on anything that was Batman.
Oh,
and that's the
God.
Only thing that he got. That is defucking pressing. The fact that he sat there and watched Bob Kane, rank up millions, probably even billions, with fucking the Keaton franchise, with Val Kilmer, with the Clooney that we sort of pretend happened didn't happen. Okay, I'm going to say a controversial opinion. Batman and Robin is not as bad as everybody says it is. It's bad, but it's hilariously bad. The pre-production,
okay, it's the comic book version of The Room.
Essentially, but without getting too sidetracked, the pre-production, there's actually a lot of Hollywood insiders that have written books. Like there's called The Disaster of Tinseltown was a book I read in college that my college professor for I went to school for film and broadcast, and he gave out this book. It was Disaster in Tinseltown. It was talking about different like failed productions, and the production of Batman and Robin is way worse than anybody ever thought it was. They had studio executives coming in with the people who were making the toys that were literally moving things around on set. I can't substantiate what they said, but it's written down. So, I mean, find the book if it's still in production, but they were saying that they had different people coming in and changing parts of the script, and then tore out half the script and were shooting it as they went along. Poor Joel Schumacher. Joel Schumacher is an underrated director.
Yes.
And Joel Schumacher kind of just let them do whatever they wanted to do. If you see Joel Schumacher's work, he should have nailed it. The cut for Batman Forever that's rumored to exist is way better than I've read the script, and it's extremely disappointing that the studio decided to just undercut everybody.
I saw a cut scene from Batman Forever where Bruce was interacting with a giant fucking bat. I know that the script dealt with more of the psychological issue that Bruce is dealing with his psyche that's divided. That was kind of the thing they were trying to play with, and they glossed over it in the movie a little bit, but since they just decided to have Nicole Kidman as eye candy and not use her as what she really actually is, a great actress, they just send that whole shit to hell and they say, fuck it, this is about toys, so fuck your story, fuck whatever the hell you're trying to say, sell me these goddamn fucking toys.
Exactly. That's why Tim didn't want to do a third movie, because everything was so deep into the rut of it. And speaking of going into another side tangent, we're going to talk about how Tim Burton got fucked on Superman Lives. Do you know Superman Lives?
Kevin Smith was contracted to write the script about it. And the infamous producer, I remember, what is his name?
John Peters.
John Peters asked him to write in a polar bear to fight, remove
the
Superman's cape, and have a giant spider to fight Superman.
When Tim Burton came on and Wesley Strick was rewriting the script after they booted off Kevin Smith, the draft that I read is actually really good. And the behind the scenes shit they had with Nicolas Cage, when people say Nicolas Cage as Superman, I'm glad that didn't happen. There's a movie. Have you heard of City of Angels with him and Meg Ryan?
Yes.
Tell me his performance in that movie is not Superman.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he toned it down a lot.
That's why so many people are like, oh, Nicolas Cage would have been a bad Superman. He was an Oscar winner at that time. We completely missed the ball on that, which is why so many people are like, oh, I wish we see that. Well, guess what? Planet is going to do that eventually. I got a guy who's willing to do it, and we're going to do a complete ground up take. And the cast that we're going off of is kind of what rest in peace, John Schnepp, but from his documentary, they said that they talked about, like, Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor, but with the state of everything going on, I think keeping Kevin Spacey far away from anything is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
we're basing it with Nicolas Cage as Superman. What's her name? Sandra Bullock will be Lois Lane. What's his name? Christopher Walken will be our Lex Luthor.
Hey.
Just from everything that it's going to be fucking out there. But the problem with watching the documentary and coming up with a fresh script is you have to study Nicolas Cage, because if you're going to create a project that was never made, you have to study an actor's performance and write it down and describe to an artist how to move it. Like, you know how Nick Cage has those awkward mannerisms?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to put all of those down. Like, there's a scene where Superman stops this guy from jumping off of a bridge, and he's sitting down on the ground. He brings him down to the ground, and it's Nick Cage, you know, fiddling, not knowing what to do with his hands, because he's fucking awkward. And I'm like, his Superman would be that awkward too. But going back to it, yeah, everybody with Tim got fucked on that, because Batman and Robin decided to fuck everybody over. And the fact that Tim was so disappointed, Tim was so excited. If you see interviews around 99 on the Howard Stern show, he asked him, oh, what happened to your Superman movie? And Tim just was like, oh, I'm getting depressed just talking about it. Because Tim works with outsider characters, and his take on Superman was that he was more of a loner and an outsider than we've ever seen before. And the fact that we didn't get to see that is a missed opportunity. Hollywood is full of those, like the Darren Aronofsky one that I told you about.
For every movie that you see, there's a million of them that didn't get to be made.
Justice League Mortal.
Yeah. And they even had the costumes, or all the actors had their costumes ready.
Yeah, they I'm trying to remember. They were shooting in Australia, and then I think they just pulled the plug on Justice League Mortal.
Yeah, because that's when the writer strike hit.
Oh fuck, yeah. I remember, cuz Supernatural got hit with that when I ended up learning about what happened. Their third season, they cut it from like 23 episodes down to 16. That whole writer's strike, I'm so glad it happened, because the writers, all of them were getting fucked over, but then it also fucked all the TV over. So you're kind of good and upset at the same time, because you're a selfish, whiny little need-be bastard, like, gimme, I want all my entertainment. But you're not realizing that the writers in Hollywood are not treated as they should be. With a lot of people, you could have a solid take on any kind of script. Doesn't matter if it's franchise, original, but if you throw it through the studio grinder, be prepared to have your baby that you spent all your time and energy bastardized.
Yep.
Like Aronofsky on his movie The Fountain, that movie, oh God, that movie went through the shit. It was supposed to be like $115 million or something, and got cut to 50 and then 30. And then the movie ended up almost not getting made. And then it had a bombed at the box office. And then Darren Aronofsky was like, oh, the version that I have is about a 5 to 6 hour movie. And I'm like, oh my God, Darren, please don't do that to me.
It's disheartening. I mean, one, as I mean, I could consider myself an artist, I guess, but
and you're an artist. Don't shortchange yourself. This man almost killed himself with episode 1 and 2. Like, oh God, I remember you messaging me several times. You're like, I'm exhausted and my spirit, jokingly, is broken. Please send help.
Oh, yeah, I remember those. My body remembers them the best.
I still have 1 and 2 still get, for some reason, we get like 50 likes and 50 comments like every day. Like, there's different people that see it, but nobody really interacts. And all of the people independently that I've tried to pitch it to are just like, yeah, we can't take this because it's already established property. I'm like, no, it's not. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, do you see Ghost Rider's name on there? They're like, it's clearly Ghost Rider. I'm like, we don't call him Ghost Rider. You're like, but it's clearly Ghost Rider. I'm like, who says? You do? I'm like, he just because he looks like Ghost Rider doesn't mean he is Ghost Rider. I mean, that's one of the things that I had a legal discussion with a buddy of mine. He was like, basically, it's just a skull on fire design. They own the name Ghost Rider. They don't own the look.
Exactly. I was like,
that's a very good point.
Exactly. This isn't that like Fender and guitars that they own the headstock.
Yeah, which is really strange. We actually we're coming up with maybe a different title for Spirit, but I don't think all the names that we came up with like don't really necessarily fit the series, but there may be might be a possibility that it's not a comic, that it might be live action. Mm. But I'm trying not to say too much because I've been talking to people about certain things that not necessarily industry, but big enough that they could pull it off. They're interested in doing it, but they're wondering how we could do it without using so much CGI that it looks bad. We're talking about possibly finding a way to do Ghost Rider practically, but trying to do that is extremely complicated. Yes. And it actually works with my writing style because you try to separate the human characters from the quote unquote comic book element of it. So that way it's in very minimal capacity, but trying to even do that on maybe a TV or mini series kind of budget would be kind of complicated, which is, I'm kind of glad they didn't do that Hulu Plus fucking Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider show that probably would have sucked ass anyway.
Yeah. They bastardized it enough than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., by the way, so why the fuck would
Let me ask you a question about the Ghost Rider and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. What did Ghost Rider do exactly?
Just burn his skull and look menacing and kill a bunch of homies and that's it.
Exactly. That's one of the things that is so annoying about the air quotes Ghost Rider character. He looks cool, but they haven't done anything with the character, which is why when I wrote Spirit, that air quotes Ghost Rider like character, we're doing a complete rehaul and having an actual person behind it. That's how I write a lot of my material, as you've seen, is I write about the person. I don't write about the personality that is the persona.
Yeah, and Jeremy is a very conflicted human being.
Oh, you're going to see it in episode one when we get it out. We're playing more of the narcotics element in like his psyche. There's also, I'm going to just state this outright. There's a little bit of Last of Us in it. Do you remember the scene where Joel plays Future Days? There's a lot of him dealing with his trauma through music, and you see a lot of his flashbacks are more family oriented. And we have more of the elements of what Supernatural used to be when it was really dark and it was actually terrifying and not anything past like the last 12 years of Supernatural. But when Supernatural was like first coming out, it was dark and it had this visual aesthetic to it. And that's kind of what we're bringing back to it, is that it's Jeremy's world. And his world is more fucked up than we've seen. I don't necessarily know if we're going to do black and white and then do flashbacks in color like we did. Mm. But thinking on it, that I think that would be a cool thing to do. But I think doing it black and white again might inhibit like the amount of viewers that we get, because so many people are like, oh, how come this doesn't have any color or flow? Or we do something like I'm trying to think of the Batman comic that I'm thinking of. There was a Joker comic. It was like an Arkham Asylum one where it was like completely fucking weird out there LSD like art style.
Oh, the Grant Morrison one?
Yeah. That one.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to do something like that, because coming up with the new episode, we're trying to, I mean, that this new episode treads some waters. It's still episode one is still going to be vampires. Like there's no way I could write around that didn't like put my foot down as to establish our lore as far as vampires, but it's going to take different steps that we did before. There's more focus on the family element as opposed to the structure of what we did last time. You get to see more of who he is as a person and how he interacts with law enforcement. He interacts with the world and kind of get more of a sense of everything that's going on, because as far as we know up to this point in the story, something happened to him 4 years ago and it's implied by other characters, but we don't know. All he does is he is very substance dependent and he can't die because of whatever deal he made. And the interesting thing we're able to play with that character is you have a character that wants nothing to die, but can't in the same right. So you have to play with that in very different waters, because you can't have the, oh, well, there's no tension because he can't die. Just because he can't die doesn't mean the people around him can't die. It's the Superman angle. Like, mm-hmm. so many people are like, Superman ain't an interesting character. He can do pretty much everything. Yeah, well, put Superman in a story about, like, that one story that Superman was talking someone down from suicide, and it was really small and compact. You don't have to do a world-ending story to make something interesting. Smaller stories, bottle episodes, are sometimes the best. X-Files proved that perfectly.
Yeah. Jeremy, it was a labor and a chore in the same time, but a labor of love at the same time, because I fell in love with the character. The character is complicated as hell.
Literally.
To say that he had his demons would be an understatement.
There's going to be more that we're playing upon, and there's more emphasis on the character of Death as like a secondary character, as like a mentor character. He essentially just comes in just to fuck with him, like, haha, can't die, suck it.
Like, just rubbing it in his face.
Pretty much. Like, the direction we're going is very much the Keanu Reeves Constantine movie. Mm. Like, very much that, which I hear rumblings from Peter Stormare.
Yeah.
That there's going to be a sequel. Don't fuck with me, Peter Stormare. I love that goddamn movie. Fun fact about that movie. When my parents used to go around to paranormal investigations, there was a place that we used to stay at in Iowa that it was in the middle of bumfuck nowhere. And they had one of the cabins was it was built out of an old train called the caboose room. And the only thing that they had was a DVD player. They didn't even have fucking Wi-Fi in this place. And it was the only TV available. And they had DVDs, and they, for whatever reason, had the Constantine movie there. First time I saw it, I had no idea what the fuck it was, and it gave me nightmares. But I loved that movie. It was so different, and people are like, oh, Keanu Reeves is John Constantine. He's not British. He's not blonde. So the movie's different. Not everything has to be directly source material.
Yeah.
If anything, is the Constantine movie, Miss the Shark, you can have the Matt Ryan CW British Constantine, and you can have the Keanu Reeves Constantine. Just like we can have the Ben Affleck Batman, the Michael Keaton Batman that's coming back for some reason,
mm-hmm.
and you could have Robert Pattinson as Batman, which people still seem to shit on for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that one scratches my head, because people give him shit for the Twilight movies. I was like, people, that was 10 years ago, and he's done a bunch of other shit afterwards. Where
the Lighthouse.
And he has proven time and time again that he's more than just a fucking pretty face. He can actually fucking act, and he's a master of accents, for God's sake.
Yeah, which I'm very interested to see Pattinson's take on Batman. From that trailer we saw, it is something that we haven't seen before. Hopefully, they don't fuck it up. I mean, the worst case they could already do, and I think they're not doing it, is they're not doing the immediate shared universe thing, because that's what fucked Ben mm-hmm. Affleck up. If they just did a solo Ben Affleck movie without throwing their dicks out and saying, hey, we're going to get to a Justice League movie because we want Avengers money, Ben Affleck got completely fucked. And if you see behind the scenes of some of the stuff he's talked about in an outright way, without like giving away too much or burning his bridges at the studio, he was going through addiction and alcohol troubles,
mm-hmm.
and his divorce. And this is a really bad joke, but with the script of Batman versus Superman, I'd want to fucking drink too. I'd want to divorce my wife. I wouldn't want to fucking be there. I'm like, seriously? Oh, I gotta say this shit? Like, Martha, save Martha. And then you get, oh my God, you get Zack Snyder in one of those watch parties that tried to justify the scene, saying it's the centerfold of the movie. You see them at their emotional point. We didn't have an emotional point. You had boring shit, and then you had extremely terrible action, homicidal Homelander Superman, and then you had Ben Affleck's murder Batman just thrown in there just for no fucking reason. And we're led to believe that this Superman, who just, spoiler alert, dies at the end, is mm-hmm. supposed to be impactful, and Batman's like, oh, well, I failed him. Motherfucker, you knew him for 5 minutes. Like,
and
calm
he
the
wanted
fuck down.
To kill him just like minutes before.
He wanted to just, he straight up almost came within an inch of killing him. And then in Justice League, it's like, I completely failed him. It's
and
like,
completely neutered.
Dude,
and that Batman is completely neutered compared to the Batman that we saw in Batman v Superman.
Yeah. Which I'm more morbidly curious how Zack Snyder is going to do his air quotes Justice League movie. That's probably just 5 more minutes of footage.
And that's it. That's practically it. He confirmed it himself. It's 4 minutes. He just filmed for 4 more minutes. He added 4 more minutes. He confirmed it himself.
I don't understand. I don't know. He said that the cut is a completely different reworking of this story, so I don't know what the fuck they're going to do, but it's Zack Snyder. I have zero faith. The only thing that I've seen of his that I actually like was the Dawn of the Dead remake that he made. That was pretty good, I mean, because it plays to Zack Snyder's strengths. And Watchmen, I mean, the only thing that Watchmen was good at is that it was already written, so he couldn't fuck that one up, but...
And he didn't stray too much far away from the source material. He pretty much kept it there.
Which is good. And yeah. It's exactly my point of on The Boys when they rip on a whole bunch of the superhero movies. And I love how they shit on Zack Snyder, because Zack Snyder is he's the broiest version of Michael Bay possible. He's just he's like, all right, so this is an exact quote for him. He's like, my kind of Batman is the one that could be raped in prison. And you're like,
the fuck?
He's like, look that quote up. He says he's going off about something like, my Batman's like really dark and edgy. He's like the kind that could be like raped in prison or something. And I'm like, what the fuck are you going off on about? And there was someone at some convention. Say what?
How the fuck that even makes sense?
There was someone going off on a convention about asking him why his Batman kills. And he's like, well, if you guys just can't deal with that, then it's like, I guess you guys are like all virgins or something to that effect. And I'm like, dude, this guy's like the total bro. Like Man of Steel was dog shit. I remember everybody kissing Man of Steel's ass, like Man of Steel was beautiful. The first few minutes of it were good. Then it's just disaster porn. The first Zack Snyder smashing $200 million into a grinder and expecting something to come out of it. Like, poor Henry Cavill, man. Poor Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill is a treasure to this country, and he's not even American.
Yeah.
I completely fucked that up. He's a treasure, but he got fucked. Like, if he was put in a J.J. Abrams style Superman movie, I think that he would be far better than he is now. Him coming in Justice League. I don't think we're going to see Henry Cavill as Superman again. I mean, with the state of Warner Brothers right now, abandoning ship on everything, COVID kind of did them a favor with them not pushing forward with Wonder Woman 84. I don't give a shit about Wonder Woman 84. I didn't give a shit about Wonder Woman in the first place. But I think with DC's restructuring and them able to not be confined to having to do studio mandates, like with what they did with Joker. I still haven't seen Joker. I probably won't, because I mean, I don't know. Just something about it rubs me the wrong way. But hopefully DC can get their shit together.
I saw Joker, and look, it's like you say, alternative takes on characters. I wouldn't say that he is the Joker, but I would say he's like a proto or a beta version of the Joker, because it's a different character altogether, and it's a different interpretation whatsoever. I mean, it's more Taxi Driver than Joker.
But yeah, which is what Martin Scorsese, who produced it, already made Taxi Driver, and then Martin Scorsese starts talking shit about comic book movies. I'm like, whoa, motherfucker, make up your mind.
Yeah, that's kind of shooting his own foot, because if he was involved in that movie, in Joker, why the fuck is he talking shit about comic book movies? I mean, I understand in a certain way his perspective, because right now, before COVID, the movie executives were just looking at, well, let's make a comic book movie. That's how we're going to get the money, and not necessarily think about substance. And, you know, Scorsese is all about substance.
I wish Scorsese would have had the balls to do a 1970s Daredevil movie. That would have been tits. They, before the Netflix show, they wanted to get back Ben Affleck. They wanted to do, I can't remember who was involved with it, but there's a pitch sizzle reel of they wanted to make a gritty 1970s, Taxi Driver, balls to the wall Daredevil movie, the run into the, what is it? The Garth Ennis, whoever did the run in the early 2000s. I know his name. I can't fucking remember it because I used to read it. But Kevin Smith. To do Say what?
Kevin Smith wrote Daredevil in the early 2000s.
It wasn't Kevin Smith. It was someone after Kevin Smith. But the run was it was where Daredevil was already outed. It was really dark. But anyway.
I think it was Brian Michael Bendis.
Brian Michael Bendis. That's it. Yes. Yeah. Brian Michael Bendis's run was perfect. It would be perfect for a movie. That's why the Netflix series got completely fucked over. I mean, granted, they got three seasons, but they are so confined to so many bitchy, needy fanboys. How come it doesn't tie into the MCU? How come it doesn't do this? I've made the argument that the Daredevil Netflix show in the Defenders universe does not take place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It takes place in a Marvel universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because they never really reference anything. They reference the incident, but they don't really have the balls to show anything, which is good. But you need to distance yourself from the corporate Mickey Mouse bullshit of it all, because would we really want Charlie Cox like in front of a CG green screen fighting like CGI mm-hmm. robots and shit? Poor mm-hmm. Charlie Cox would probably stab his own eyes out and become Daredevil literally at that point. If you listen to Michael Rosenbaum's podcast, he talks about like he hates a lot of the CGI that goes into a lot of the sets. That's why he didn't want to do the crossover for the CW, because he hates working with all the CGI and the fake screens and everything. He said even Bruce Campbell, when Bruce Campbell had the same point, when Bruce Campbell was on his podcast, he was like, I hate talking to fucking giant tennis balls. He was like, I can't act with the tennis ball. Give me an actual person.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that James Gunn does well, that at least he, like, any characters that is, like, for real CG, then he just hires a guy, a stand-in.
Yeah, exactly.
He just puts a stand-in. I mean,
you can do practical effects and have them done well. Granted, it takes more time. There's a really good channel on YouTube. I wish I could think of that. I could find the name, but they go into deep detail about movies that were never made. There was a Hulk movie that was having Hulk be completely animatronic, and they built a 9-foot-tall animatronic Hulk. Holy and it looks shit. Fucking amazing, because they didn't want to do all CGI. They had these giant Hulk size statues that were being completed, because they were having it move, and they had different like parts of it with remote control operated buttons where you would see like the Bruce Banner like shirt rip style thing.
Okay. And this is before Ang Lee, the Ang Lee Hulk. This is before the Ang Lee Hulk.
This was before the Ang Lee Hulk. If I could look it up, I know exactly. I'm gonna be Jamie from fucking Joe Rogan's podcast and look it up.
Young Jamie. Young Jamie.
I know exactly the YouTube channel that it was on. Let's see. It was the boop 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 boop. Super Void Cinema. That's the name of the channel. They were talking about, they have a video on there. Like, they have a bunch of different videos. They have one about the canceled history of Watchmen, Darren Aronofsky's Batman. They have the shit ton of catalog of Fantastic Four movies. They also have Hulk movies. And I'm scrolling through this trying to see who was working on that movie. But they already had, they were making it more of like what Nolan did for Batman. They wanted to do for the Hulk. They wanted it to be Hulk was barely in the movie, but when you saw him, it had a point to it. But they built this really, really amazing animatronic Hulk. Like it was around the 90s when Jurassic Park came out. That's what they were doing and playing around with special effects. But you get so many people that are just CGI dependent. Like, that's kind of why I'm so sick of seeing Marvel movies, because like in Civil War, like, you get this fanboy cloud of you just don't pay attention to it. And then you sit back and eventually you just get sick of it, because so much CGI is just unnecessary. Like, they had an amazing suit for Tom Holland, and then they just decided to throw CGI over it because fuck it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, have you heard this? The guys from the Corridor Crew?
I follow them. Their special Cake Day is one of my favorite things of Spider-Man that's been done besides Spider-Verse in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about that to nauseam, about how they can, how can you use both things, the practical and special effects, that you can purposely blend both of them to, you know, whatever the one lags, the other one can fulfill, and not depend on one specifically.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's just extremely annoying. With they just depend on it. Like, I wonder how many times the actors from Endgame and Infinity War were just so bored of working on a green screen all day long. I mean, build a set, build something. Like, the only reason why they're so dependent on that is because of studio release dates. And you got to have this movie be out at a certain time because we need this. And the merchandise sales are out the astronomical levels for, I think, Endgame and Infinity War both made fucking $1 billion.
Yeah.
That's probably, most likely doubled that in their merchandise sales.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the way that it could be done now from now on in terms of blending special effects with practical effects is the way how they filmed The Mandalorian. That is the best example.
I know how they film it with the roto. I think it's the rotoscope, the way that they do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of date myself here and piss some people off. I'm not a Star Wars fan. I can't find anything Star Wars that I've actually liked. Mostly, I think it's due to college. in college, we had to do film thesis on the importance of Star Wars. I have seen the first three Star Wars movies more times in class out of my – without any kind of free will – being able to like shy away from it. We had to watch the first three movies and talk about the cultural significance of it. Oh, and God. my counterpoint was that yes, it has a cultural significance, but it's not the most cultural significant film franchise. I'm like, there's other franchises, and I tried to argue Back to the Future had much more of a potential that was never seen as opposed to Star Wars. My teacher's like, ah, horse shit. I'm like, pfft. Fuck you, dude.
And whatever. Then he is a fanatic, and that's the problem I have with pretty much everything that is going on now. I mean, I even toned down my viewing in terms of TV series and whatnot because of that simple fact that now it has become a religion. You have to do this. You have to watch this. You have to. No, I don't. I don't want to fucking watch a thing. I don't want to fucking watch it.
That's why so many things with the MCU now. Did you know they made a Cloak and Dagger show? I fucking didn't. I was like, they made a Cloak and Dagger
show. I've heard of it, but never seen a single goddamn episode.
Yeah, they also, for some reason, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. finished, and I'm like, oh, that was still on?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's that level of dogmatic, you have to watch everything. Like, that's why I jumped ship off the CW, too, because, like, after the Crisis on Infinite Earths event, oh, I stopped watching Flash, and someone, that friend I was telling you about that I was talking to about, like, how CW is coming to an end, he's like, oh, yeah, and Black Lightning. I'm like, wow, shows you how much I care. I completely forgot Black Lightning was a thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's still on.
Going back to that point that you talked about at the beginning, with the whole, you know, forcing shit on to your mainstream shit. I mean, I'm not against of you portraying characters a way that they're not conventionally portrayed. But let's be honest, and if I get canceled, fuck it. Who listens to this shit anyway? but the thing is, like, who isn't gay now in a comic book series? Who isn't gay now? Everybody's gay.
That's the thing that do you remember the whole New Warriors thing that was a huge controversy?
Oh my God, that was the dumbest. That was the dumbest decision ever.
Perfect encapsulation. Now let me state this for the record. There's nothing wrong, period, I should state.
Yes.
As clear as humanly possible. There's nothing wrong with having characters with diversity.
Exactly. I'm not against that either.
Becomes the character, then there's no point. Like, you're just having, like, the biggest thing that I can think of is when they made Alan Scott come out as gay or Iceman. I'm like,
yes, why? That fucking pissed me off. I was like, okay, this character has been straight for 50 fucking years, and now all of a sudden he's gay?
Why? Like, why? There's no point. Like, are you just trying to be cool and modern? Like, yeah, everybody needs their superhero that they, like, could identify with.
Exactly.
But you're just shoehorning shit at that point. You're just shoehorning. Like, all of the times that they said they wanted Andrew Garfield Spider-Man to be bi. I'm like, why? Like, I don't get it. Like, I seriously do not get it. Like, I'm not against the LGBT community. I'm not against any form of representation. I'm more confused of why you're trying to rewrite already established characters for some narrative to fill a company checkpoint.
Yeah, and they also tried to do that with Star Wars. Sorry, I have to mention that again as well. But they tried to do that with the new trilogy with Poe Dameron and Finn. They're trying to make them turn gay on each other. It never happened. But in order to silence a few, they added a scene in the end of the movie, and the last one, they added a scene where two women are kissing. Just to, like, okay, well, we have gay people here in Star Wars land.
That's weird. Isn't Star Wars like not to say that in a galaxy far, far away, you can't have lesbian or gay characters. That just seems kind of strange.
That's just, you know, I'll say it. Fuck it. Glad paying them money and they're okay. Yeah, we'll get your representation.
That's why every CW show has somebody that, like, their version of female empowerment is not empowerment. When you have to emphasize that it's female empowerment, you're inherently missing the point. Yes. That's why Jessica Jones didn't have the, like, female girl power. It was more of a abuse story of somebody that was standing up for women's rights, that, like, saying, hey, being abused ain't cool, which it isn't. Like, you could have several different layers of presenting your characters, but when you got the same shit over and over and over, the only thing with the diversity that I'll have to argue is people are like, oh, Miles Morales was diversity. No, bullshit. That was actually something completely different. They found a loophole around that.
Yes. I mean, and they hit a trifecta there because he's colored and Puerto Rican.
Yeah. I mean, like, the whole – I remember when – I read the entire Ultimate Spider-Man run. I grew up reading Ultimate Spider-Man. And when the death of Peter Parker happened, everybody was fucking livid because they're like, Spider-Man's black? What the fuck is going on? I'm like, whoa, calm down. Spider-Man is not black. This is a new character who's half black, half Puerto Rican, and his name's Miles Morales. And they're like, well, that's still horseshit. Peter Parker, Spider-Man. I'm like, well, guess what, motherfucker? He's 6 feet under.
Yep. He's sleeping with the fishes.
That's something that I think the MCU is probably going to fucking butch. Is they're going to butch Miles Morales. They're going to do something to make him LGBT or something that's not into the character. God. Which is why I'm glad not Marvel Studios, Sony actually made Into the Spider-Verse and gave us a faithful adaptation of Miles and the game. I've only seen bits and pieces from the game, mainly because I don't have a PlayStation 5 or 4, so my experience with gaming is watching people play it online and get depressed.
It's like, okay, these people have toys that I don't.
Exactly. Like, that's why I think, and other people have made the point with Spider-Man, the Spider-Man character. Spider-Man is a character that I've loved ever since I was a kid, read for the longest time. I absolutely, and this is going to be the hate Tom Holland segment, I fucking hate the John Watts Spider-Man series that they've gone through the MCU because it's horseshit. It's so many people are trying to say that it's the Ultimate Spider-Man run. They just threw Spider-Man into the MCU with trying to make him a fanboy, which, yeah, he was in the comics, but the movies are not about anything. It's just Peter Parker absentmindedly going through like a Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is not it's not a bad take, but it's fucking boring. Like, the first time I saw him, I remember the girl I was dating at the time, the second I saw Spider-Man show up in Civil War, I cried like a little girl because I'm like, it's about time. And then when Homecoming came out, I was livid. I'm like, what the fuck was that? I'm like, seriously? I'm like, you don't even have Peter Parker with any kind of reason to be Spider-Man. The only reason why he's Spider-Man is to be a hero to Tony Stark. I'm like, who gives a shit about Tony Stark? He was Spider-Man because of, yeah, you have to go past the Uncle Ben shit. But when you are trying to, you're missing the entire point of Spider-Man.
And also everything that he has donated by Tony Stark.
Exactly, which is why I think the PS4 and PS5 version of Spider-Man is the best live-action Spider-Man movie we have, even though it's not live-action, besides Spider-Verse. because what that game did is it had Peter Parker with a purpose. He built everything by himself from the ground up. He was already mature. He'd already gone through all of this shit. And he was able to do things that Tom Holland only wishes he can do. Tom Holland, it reminds me of that fucking Doge meme of like, here's one thing where it's like really, really strong. And then here's the other one that's just a little bitch. Tom Holland is that second little bitch. Tom Holland is like the little baby spider bitch in the corner that complains because he skid his knee when fucking Peter Parker fought the Sinister Six and nearly was killed. Here, Tom Holland is trying to fight Mysterio. He's like, this is starting a band-aid. I'm like, motherfucker, are you kidding me? Like, I am so not looking forward to Spider-Man 3. I mean, all the best to Tom Holland. Like, he came in and he was the youngest Spider-Man, which, cool. But if the rumors are true, which they're probably not, that Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire are coming back, I don't want to see them in the MCU. I would rather have them be in their own standalone miniseries or something and then introduce Tom Holland. Because just introducing past Spider-Man characters is only fucking cash grabbing and nostalgia baiting at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to go really, really far nostalgia baiting, get Nicholas Hammond from the 1970s TV show.
God.
That impressed me. Nicholas Hammond said he's 63 years old. He said he would still gladly come back and do it.
Oh my God. Dude, I mean, if Harrison Ford was swinging with ropes in his 70s, this dude can probably do it.
Fucking, oh my God. I remember going to, you remember Hollywood Video when video stores were still a thing?
Yeah.
I remember seeing that those Spider-Man movies, because they were packaged as movies, not a TV show, over and over as a kid, that goddamn 70s born. Fucking, it was fucking terrible, but it worked so well that they tried. But then you get all of the versions of Spider-Man that didn't happen. Like, I wish we would have got James Cameron's Spider-Man, even though it would have been weird.
It would have been fucking...
Have you ever heard bits of the script about, like, Spider-Man and Mary Jane having sex on the Twin Towers and Spider-Man having a line saying, I'm Spider-Man, motherfucker, for some reason? That's in the script. I am not kidding. There's a scene. I think it's Peter Parker. He gets like, he's trying to be like super edgy and like trying to intimidate them. And he's like, I'm Spider-Man, motherfucker. I'm like, James, that's Batman. Wrong character.
Yeah. Wrong character.
Have you ever seen the Canon Films description of what I think it was Toby Hooper or somebody wanted to do with Spider-Man? They thought Spider-Man, they didn't know anything about the comics. They thought Spider-Man was like the Wolfman and he turned into a giant spider.
Oh,
and it
my
was
God.
Like really body horror and strange.
Oh my
Canon
God.
Films. There's a documentary on Canon Films and they had like a 5-minute segment on Spider-Man and they had so many different people on Spider-Man throughout the years that Spider-Man got fucked over more times than I can count, but in a good way that technology finally caught up. I don't think in the 80s or the 70s or even the late 90s you could have done a Spider-Man movie with the technology we had.
No, I mean, like, it happened in the right time. It happened in the right time.
To show you my point, did you know there is actually one of the first fan films ever made? There's a 1969 fan film of Spider-Man made with it. It's so fucking horrible. You have to look this up on YouTube. It was made in, I think, 69. Hold on. Now I have to look this up. Spider-Man.
You have to fact check yourself.
I gotta fact check myself. Spider-Man 1969 movie.
Oh my God.
Yep, Spider-Man 1969 fan movie. The first ever documented in its unofficial live appearance. And it's 11 minutes long and it's just Spider-Man. And the effects are terrible. Like when he's swinging, it's literally an action figure on a string. It's Spider-Man in like the desert scene from like old Star Trek. And he's fighting a guy with like a metal helmet.
Oh,
and
my God.
The fight scenes are absolutely atrocious. I remember on a podcast with friends of mine years ago, we got extremely fucking shit-faced and watched this, and I couldn't watch halfway through because I'm like, you can see the fucking string.
So it's basically an old Star Trek episode.
it's basically that. Speaking of low-budget movies, have you ever seen the Roger Corman-produced Fantastic Four movie?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I've never seen the whole thing.
I am going to make a very controversial statement. This will probably be the last topic that I cover on this podcast, is I think that is the best version of Fantastic Four that they could ever be produced. The behind-the-scenes documentary is the, one of the most fascinating things I've seen from a film standpoint. They optioned that for $1 million, and it had to be done in a year. In 1992 with Fantastic Four, you can't do that. But it was, there was rumors that it was made specifically so that it will never be released. It was only an option grab at that point. The cast for the entire movie are being interviewed. It's doomed. The documentary is called Doomed, the history of Roger Corman's Fantastic Four. The entire cast thought this was their big break. They were signing up to have their first taste in Hollywood. They had all this animatronics. They had everything pulled out from them. And Avi Arad, who, if you know anything about Avi Arad or the name, is literally the spawn of Satan and the fucking Antichrist that ruined so many things. He ordered, and this is just legend from what they said, he ordered all the physical copies to be destroyed. The copies that we have are bootlegged. But I hear tell, I think his name is, I'm trying to remember his name. His name is Culp. He played Dr. Doom. He posted on Instagram that he said, I can't confirm my source at this time, but a physical print of Fantastic Four still exists at Marvel Studios, and they are working on trying to get a hold of it.
Oh, like, shit.
The actual physical print, not the bootleg shit. Like, they could restore it and remaster it. The only – he went into a Q&A about it, and he said the only reason why they haven't done it is because they're probably going to time it around the release of when they do the new Fantastic Four, and they're going to probably do straight to DVD, and they're trying to probably get DVD sales out of it. That's probably the only way to do it. But the story of Roger Corman's Fantastic Four is so interesting, because everybody on that, they tried their best, and everybody shit cans Roger Corman's Fantastic Four, even though Roger Corman didn't direct it. I can't think of the goddamn director, but I love that fucking movie for what it stood for. It is so cheesy and batshit out there, but the fact that they tried this hard to get it done in a year for $1 million in the 90s is a testament of God at that point. What they went through behind the scenes, they were literally doing pickups and moving sets right on the shooting day. They would shoot for 12 hours, move them to a completely different set the next morning, shoot for 12 hours, and they would do no retakes. They would literally go, okay, guys, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. Even Culp, the guy who played Dr. Doom, they didn't have him ADR his lines. His lines are just...
So he's just basically a stand-in.
Yeah, he's you can't hear any of his dialogue. One of my favorite scenes, and I remember watching it with my ex at the time. We watched the movie before we watched the documentary. There's Dr. Doom's big introduction, and the Fantastic Four already at this point have escaped Doom's lair. Doom immediately comes down this staircase, and he flips his cape, and he's having this monologue and going, and then Dr. Doom turns around and looks, and he's like, oh, because he's talking to nobody at that point. He had a giant he had a giant monologue, and there was nobody there to even give a shit. The Fantastic Four already escaped, and it's so clearly visible that you can see a boom mic in the background where the cut has been, where the shape where they escaped from. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ. There's even a scene in there where it's the Thing punching somebody, and it's the Adam West freeze frame with the picture flipped around and punching sound effects. I'm like, oh my God. But the fact that they got it made, bless those people. Bless them for putting up with that shit, because now they have a story to tell for the rest of their life. The con circuit that they go to, all the original actors, as far as I know, are still alive. What they originally wanted to do, they were all signed on for 3 movies because they thought it was going to be a franchise. But the movie went to shit and all the copies were destroyed, then the comic book crash of the 90s happened, and Fantastic Four got fucked around. And then all the actors were basically told, hey, guess what? Go fuck yourself. We want nothing to do with you.
And you can thank DC for that comic book crash. Thanks for them reprinting the Death of Superman a trillion times over.
Have you ever seen Max Landis's Death of Superman video?
No.
Look up Max Landis, Death of Superman. Max Landis completely nails. He has these segments on like hour long videos about like different topics, and one of it is the death of Superman, and like the his reason that the comic book industry is like fucked is because death of Superman. It's hilarious. It's got different actors. It's got Elijah Wood. It's got a bunch of different people in it. I don't know how he knows that many famous people, but it's fucking hilarious.
No, they're probably geeks.
Yeah, they're big geeks. Hell, even one of my buddies said he compares me to Max Landis. I'm like, I can't tell if that's a compliment or an insult, but I'll take it.
Hey, I mean, I would cut off my right arm if I get to meet Kevin Smith. So that tells you what kind of geek I am.
Kevin Smith, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it, and that's not anything bad about Kevin Smith. I know somebody that knows Kevin Smith directly, and I'm trying to see about having him pick up my Batman series or interested
in it. Oh, he's a big Batman mark.
Well, the thing is, my Batman series that I've had in the works, the one that was supposed to be live action and got shut down, I have that script, and I've been working on it since, let's see, 456. About 7 years now, about 7 years when 2021 rolls around. But perfecting that script, I think that what for my Batman series, the visual style is going to be a combination of the Burton and Schumacher era, not like the Batman and Robin, but like that level of aesthetic, but in a darker tone.
Mm-hmm.
But the choice that we have visually for our Batman, I think you would find interesting. Dave DeCoe. Company from X-Files.
He was rumored to play Batman for a while.
Yeah, picture Dave Duchovny in this show he's in Aquarius, where he plays like this 50-year-old police detective. Dave Duchovny is a perfect cranky old Bruce Wayne, because the way that I pitched it is it's not a Batman story, it's a Bat family story. The plot of that series is it takes place in winter in Gotham. Essentially, Bruce Wayne, after a 30-year war on crime, goes missing. And it's up to Tim Drake, the third Robin, to assemble a team to find him. What's interesting is he assembles the old Justice Society, who it consists of Jay Garrick, who can barely walk and is on a cane, Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern, who's powerless and an alcoholic and fat. You have Hawkman, who is schizophrenic and speaks backwards, and you have Wildcat Al Pratt, who is also an alcoholic and he's a relic of the past, all teamed up to try to find Batman. And it's all plays heavy into the last 80 years or so of Batman, but it doesn't have like continuity heavy shit in it. You could essentially pick up right where, if you've never read a Batman comic, you could pick it up and probably follow along. There's Nightwing in it. There's Batgirl, sort of references to Batwoman, but the plot is going to be interesting in the fact that we have an antagonist that I can't say who it is, but the interesting hook of it is you will never find out who the antagonist is.
Hmm. Good.
Because there's a mysterious character who's pulling the strings, and you have different avenues of who this character's identity is, but we're never going to tell who the character is. It's up to the audience to decide who it is.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question. Have you heard of the comic that came out, the series that Geoff Johns wrote, The Three Jokers?
Heard of it, haven't read it, heard so many bad things about it.
You heard the ending, though?
I have not. Feel free to spoil me. I might rage or whatever.
You might. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't read it yet. The ending is that there are three Jokers. There are two Jokers. They're allegedly the original Joker is the one that survived, allegedly. And that the Joker had those other two Jokers work for him in order to spread his work and multitasking at the same time in order to have Batman entertained. But allegedly the original Joker is the one that survived. And that original Joker is the Killing Joke Joker. You know, the guy that got thrown into the acid bat. And that used to be a comedian, you know, per the story. And the thing is that Batman caught him. He's caught. And the thing is that if you remember that story in The Killing Joke, that Joker had what he remembers is that he was married, right? And he and his wife was pregnant at the time, and then she was gunned down by the mob, I think, if I recall correctly.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Well, it turns out she's alive and well, and she has a 13-year-old kid now. The kid is 13 years old. And they're living in Alaska, and Bruce Wayne has known about this for years. And Bruce Wayne actually knows the name of the real Joker. But he is hiding the family in order to protect Joker from hurting them. And also to see if that can help him recover his sanity. That is the ending.
I'm leaving my silence as an indication of how I feel about that. Parts of that sound interesting. Part of it sounds like deliberate horseshit.
I mean, recent years have not been kind to Geoff Johns. I mean, that Doomsday Clock was total garbage, in my opinion. If you like
I'm glad I didn't see that. I didn't pay attention to it. I'm like, what are you going to do past Watchmen? You can't. Watchmen is one of the things you can't touch. Sequels. I mean, the Watchmen TV show was different, but yes. I mean.
And it's a good continuation to the story, but it doesn't dive in and it doesn't add anything extra in terms of what you already know. Well, with the exception of what they did to Dr. Manhattan, I'm not gonna go there.
Yeah, let's not touch that one.
Yeah, let's not go there. but the thing is that, he's missed the mark. I mean, for a guy that was hitting all the notes in the 90s and in the early 2000s. After Rebirth, the whole things just went south.
That's why, as a writer, I always try to make sure I have three different people's opinions, because when I submit a script to somebody, I don't want them to just say, oh, suck my dick, and be like, oh, this is the best thing ever. Tell me it sucks. Tell me it fucking sucks. I have the Kevin Smith complex where I think everything, like, part of me is like, I'm like, all right, I think this could work. The other part of me is like, oh, this completely fucking sucks. Like, you suck. You're a hack. You're never gonna work in this town. Yeah. You suck. Fuck you.
Same thing with me.
Like, the past problem that I've been having on the last script is working on this Spider-Man script. And I told one of my writing buddies who almost gave him a heart attack, because he's like one of the editors that runs through everything. I said Spider-Man Dark Mirror might end up being 300 pages by the time it's done. He's like, please kill me now.
You it's like to write biblically, don't you? You like to write in biblical proportions.
What?
You like to write in biblical proportions.
I have the Stephen King complex. I cannot write comic book format, no matter how many times I try. And this will probably be the last thing, because I do have to go in about 10 minutes. But okay. I can't write comic book format. I think comic book format is inherently a dated formula, because if you know the comics in like the 60s and the 40s and the 30s, they were only having word balloons to describe the actions. Now you can paint a narrative into comic book format, which isn't necessarily done anymore. You have the 22, it's like the TV show format. Having a 22 minute TV show or like animated show or anything is so crippling for creativity. You can't cram in character motivations. You can't cram into plot and everything in that amount of time. And that's why so many TV shows, comics, animated shows, they're limited. And that's why streaming services are thriving, because Stranger Things, you couldn't tell Stranger Things on a network for fucking 40 minutes or 20 minutes. You can't establish that amount of characters in that amount of time. That's why I've said to so many people why independent networks and in terms of TV, streaming service, comics, whatever, are the way of the future. Because as it's going right now, yeah, the big three, Image, or not Image, DC, Marvel, and whatever other third one you want to throw out, they are not with the times. That's the reason that comic book sales and everything else are not improving, because they're trying to change what isn't broken. How many more, like I said in the beginning, how many more times can we see, oh, here's a new take on Batman. Here's a new take on Batman. We've seen 57 new takes on Batman. Like, how many more fucking stories can you tell on Batman? I want to see 57 more takes on Robin that we haven't seen before. Let's get a Green Lantern series that is something that's not completely like Star Wars ripoff, or just something has to be done either internally from the mechanisms of Marvel or DC, because Marvel and DC are held together with that tight wave of the, we have to have an event every single year. And I understand, like I said, you're not going to just give up their cash pony, because that'd be stupid. We'd have to crash all over again. But if you're going to have your cake and eat it too, do something with it. You haven't done something with any of these characters in 20 years, to my recollection. I mean, you have all these events where there's stuff, and then there's stuff to change the status quo, but the status quo is always going to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't do anything to change that. And not trying to suck my own dick here, but that's one of the reasons, again, why we started Planet, and why Boom Studios and other places are so thriving in independent markets, because they're able to tell their own confined stories. Boom Studios built themselves by, I think, having G.I. Joe or some fucking comics. And now they do Power Rangers, and they were able to do, while I do have my own issues with Boom, and I'm not going to burn bridges, please hire me. they're able to pick up and do their own stuff, except for some small thing. And this is the last thing I wanted to go into. Boom Studios, I mean, they take a lot of ideas from independent projects. Hell, one thing that I noticed, my friends from Power Rangers Unworthy, they have so many of their characters that are literally visual ripoffs in Boom Studios, that they're either heavily inspired or something is amiss, because in Boom Studios' new Power Rangers series, they have a new Green Ranger who is their new seventh Ranger. And I'm like, oh, gee, I wonder where they decided to come up with that idea. Uh-huh. It's like, excuse me, motherfucker, but it's going to be Tommy or Lord Dragon or some stupid contrived horse shit, which there's actually a bit in one of the older scripts of Lost Ranger, one of the other episodes, where Alexander just laughs at somebody and says, well, just let's all be thankful it's not another Tommy crisis. We already have way too many of those, and it's already been played out.
Oh, God. I mean, thank God for originality, right?
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do in the Planet universe. But hopefully, my plan, granted, it's been since 2017 trying to launch shit. I wanted to have Toxin out by now. Toxin still, my God, that project has been beaten to shit, kicked into an alley, and pissed on 4 or 5 different times. The guy, and I'm not going to name names, who's a really good artist, has fucked me over beyond belief. He was supposed to start it in 2018, and we had a release date. We wanted to have it October 30th, 2018. 5 pages in, I can't really do this right now. I got to focus on everything and just... But in a way, I want to leave off on this note. The fact that these projects that I've been working on, especially with you, the fact that they haven't gotten where they are is actually a good thing in hindsight, because it allows me to focus and rework the script and come up with different things that I didn't think about before. Like with Spirit, there's different angles that I'm playing upon that I didn't focus upon. And the further you get into production with different things, you learn as a writer or an artist, you're like, hey, this last thing kind of sucks. Like, I can do better than this. It's like I said, the Kevin Smith complex, where every time I get a script done, I review an old script. Like, who wrote this horse shit? And you look, oh, wait, I wrote this horse shit. Like the Toxin series that I'm reworking right now. Even though Toxin, we have to adhere to some level of Marvel acknowledgement, but we're not imprisoned by it. The universe that we built there is that all the heroes are gone. Like, all the heroes that you know, since it takes place in the early 2000s, they're already all gone. So that's already something we don't have to adhere to. Like, we don't have to adhere to the Avengers. Like, we don't have to adhere to that. Hell, since the Spider-Man series I'm working on is set in that Spirit-type universe, the only reference that we really get to any of the major characters is there's a scene with Jessica Jones in the Spider-Man one, and Jessica Jones just starts riffing that, yeah, if you have any complaints, take it up with the giant metal condom that's in office, implying that Tony Stark is the president of the United States.
Which is...
originality is definitely sorely lacking. That's I think the Cliff Notes summary to leave it off on is originality is sorely lacking. And streaming services are starting to come up, which is really good, because during this pandemic, we ain't got shit. We ain't got shit.
Well, that's true. But at least we have this outlet. I mean, this is a double-edged sword, because, yes, shit is bad in terms of originality, but The thing is that thanks to the internet and stuff like this, allows creators to have their independent voice in one way or another. So this is the way that, to not quote The Mandalorian, I'm sorry, but this is the way that we're going to get our voices out there and create our own stuff and not have the man or whatever authority figure you want to add there tell us what to do or how to do it. And do it our the way we want to do it, and do it in a way that is satisfying to us.
Exactly. I don't play well with studio notes. You tell me this has got to be shorter. I say, fuck you, find someone else.
In the words of the great old school wrestling manager, Jim Cornette, thank you, fuck you, bye.
Exactly. I guess that's where we're going to leave it off on. Thank you, fuck you, bye.
That's the way you have to tell them. Thank you, fuck you, bye.
I'm going to write that. I'm going to make that into a shirt. I want that.
He already has that t-shirt. And he will sue you.
Okay, sweet. I know what I'm going to buy.
He will sue you if you use it.
Well, fuck. I'll just wait till he dies then.
I mean, you can buy it, but I'm just saying that if you try to use it for an expression as yourself and try to build one on yourself, he will sue you.
Well, one small thing. Out of everything that we have, and this is I've said this before, but this is literally the last thing because I literally have to go in like a minute or two.
Okay.
Is of all the series we've worked on, we've never had one lawsuit for Marvel. The only can you guess what one project? And I don't even know if we had this project. The only cease and desist I've ever received is for our Smallville pitch. I wanted to do a Smallville series. Seriously, Warner Brothers said no, under no circumstances we are issuing a cease and desist. I'm like, really?
They're very touchy with Superman.
Yeah, I was like, but Batman's perfectly fine. I emailed the representative. They're like, oh, we don't care what you do with that. We don't want you doing Smallville. I'm like,
well, you have to understand, for them, Superman is their Jesus.
Yeah, I was like, all right, whatever. I mean, I only wrote like a small chapter outline, and I had concept art for everything and just describing it. And then they just sent us a cease and desist, and I'm like, all right, fuck you, bye. But yeah, I guess that's where we're gonna leave off on, because I gotta take off. Okay. I didn't realize it was this late already.
Well, I'm sorry to hold you up that long, but
No, you're fine. I ramble for fucking hours.
You have to get all that shit out of your chest, man.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But this was fun.
You know, the door is always open here, and anytime that you want to jump in and tell the good people what you think of certain things, you can let them
episode
know.
Episode 3 is 157 pages. You have 2 days. Let's go.
Oh, well. I guess I'll kill myself now. Well, man, I know you have to go, so you go handle your thing, and we'll end it right here. But then next time, we'll just keep the conversation going.
Yeah, well, peace, man. Good talking with you.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was long. I would like to thank my man, Robert, for that conversation. For those of you who don't know, I worked in a comic book with him. A web series. I got to do 2 issues, which is Spirit of Vengeance, in which we kind of lost over a bit on the beginning. I'm sorry that we did it like very informal, but that's the way we roll. I hope you guys don't get tired. I mean, this is the longest we've gone so far, but I thank Robert for his time, for giving his input, and hopefully I think you guys enjoy his experience and the media should not be questioned. He is a hardworking dude. He works for he's hustling for his dreams. He's actually doing something about it, and you know, kind of pumps me up to do my to restart my creations, because I kind of left it on the wayside due to everything that's going on. But you know, if you got a project, if we're gonna end with something here, let's end it with that. If you got a project, if you want something to be done, go after it, chase it, follow it, and get after that. So on that note, this has been Ariel in the Husky Bad Boo podcast, and I hope you guys have a great day. Take care, guys.